Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Coffee Clatch. The Coffee Clatch and Special Needs Talk Radio Network feature outstanding programming for the special needs community. Our team of hosts provide educational interviews. Our shows are not designed to provide listeners with specific or personal medical, legal, or professional service or advice. Parents of children with health issues should always consult their health care provider for medical advice, medications, or treatment. Any show discussing rights and law for special needs children and special education are presented as general information and not legal advice. Special Needs Coffee Clatch Limited does not promote any host or guest's individual practice, programs, treatments, or products. We thank you for joining us and are proud to provide excellence in broadcasting for the special needs community. And now, on to the interview.
Good evening. This is Angie Eaton. Tonight, our show is on the joys of becoming Maverick Free, the final show in our series about Maverick Minds. But first, I'd like to introduce again Mayor Johnson, the makers of Boardmaker. They've recently released an e-catalog featuring hundreds of great products, including several significantly reduced in price. Visit www.mayor-johnson.com to learn more. So for the final time, Dr. Florence, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Angie, and I'm delighted to be here with you. You're a great interviewer.
Well, thank you very much. I, again, just want to thank you for all of the insights and time that you've shared with us. It's really been quite a treat for me and all of the listeners, for sure, to be able to spend so much time with you talking about Mavericks.
You're welcome.
Well, I'd like to sort of recap what we've talked about in our series so far. What we've learned is that Maverick Minds share two things in common, really. They're very highly visual thinkers, and they have difficulty with listening and language. And although the language or verbal skills of speaking, reading, and writing may vary, most all Mavericks struggle the most with listening or auditory processing.
Mm-hmm.
But these two things in common, however, we've also learned and heard stories from you that Mavericks don't come in a one-size-fits-all package. A Maverick could be a baby with seemingly no connection to those around him, like your son, Whitney, a completely nonverbal child, a lively teenager who displays many talents but struggles in school, a medical student who performs brilliantly except when it comes to passing boards, or even a brilliant CEO who is accused of being abrupt and short with those around him.
Mm-hmm.
We've also learned that Mavericks can pretty quickly be labeled in the system as having a psychiatric disorder like ADHD, autism, Asperger's, or oppositional defiant disorder.
Mm-hmm.
From the clinicians really aren't familiar with the profile of the Maverick mind. And once this happens, the picture really becomes clouded and the true source of Maverick symptoms is really lost in the picture.
Correct.
So in our last interview, Dr. Florence, we talked about the specifics of your brain engineering program, and it's designed to eliminate the fighting between the visual and verbal pathways in the brain to eliminate symptoms. And I'd like to follow up today on that interview by talking about what it looks like when the fighting begins to stop in a Maverick mind during the course of brain engineering. So I'd like to start off with a quote from my own daughter when we were going through your brain engineering program. And what happened was we were at a restaurant eating dinner, and it was roughly 2 weeks into our program with you. And she was sitting at the table just bubbly and just seemingly so happy. And I asked her what was going on and why was she so happy. And she said to me, "I feel like I can talk to the world now." And that was such a profound thing that she said, and really a metaphor for what happens when that verbal pathway gets opened up.
Mm-hmm.
Just wondering, do you remember that moment, Dr. Florence?
I absolutely do.
And is that a common sort of enlightenment that you see in Mavericks once they start the treatment with you and once they start opening up that pathway?
It is, Angie, for sure. There is a point in almost every case where that verbal pathway opens and the Maverick themselves think, oh, this is what it's like to be in verbal land. This is what those verbal people are experiencing. For example, I worked with a surgery resident, and he would be so deep in doing surgery, so intense in visual thinking, that when he came out from surgery, he was grumpy and short with the nurses, and they thought he didn't have very good bedside manner. And he said, well, he was tired. You know, he didn't mean to be grumpy, but he said, you know, I could do more operations. I mean, if you told me to do two more operations, that would be no problem. I'm not that tired. If you let me stay in visual land, I could keep going forever. But when I have to come out and go to verbal land, it's exhausting. And one day he called me and left me a voicemail, and all it said was, I can hear, I can hear, I can hear, I can hear.
Wow. Well, and it's amazing to me that he could have gotten through all of his education and all of the rigorous training and still have trouble in that area.
Well, his undergraduate was in engineering, and then he went to medical school. So after he got out of high school, he went to visual land as quickly as he could.
Right. And I hear Maverick in the background again today, Dr. Florence. Everybody, that's Dr. Florence's dog, Maverick.
And Maverick's with me everywhere, so.
Well, that's a pretty neat story. I just, if I could, just share a couple of other examples from my own story with my daughter. Again, a few weeks into our training, one day she came home from school and literally ran in the door, ran to her room to find the dictionary, and started thumbing through the dictionary, looking at these words like she had just discovered English for the first time in her life. I thought that was pretty remarkable. I mean, why would she be coming home looking at a dictionary all of a sudden? There must
right,
have been
but
some,
tell a little bit more
shift.
About Meredith. Tell about her super creative visual brain. So that our listeners understand what a true angel your daughter is. She's so creative. She is so, her imagination is phenomenal. So explain a little bit about this wonderful, wonderful visual brain. And that will help us think about why we want to call our Mavericks, Mavericks forever.
Okay.
Because a Maverick mind is a Leonardo da Vinci brain. It's an Einstein brain. It's a very, very wonderful brain. Yes, there are some glitches in verbal thinking, but those are some things we can repair and train. There's skills that we can master. But that super visual brain is a treasure chest. It's a wealth of brain power. So describe Meredith a little bit in terms of visual thinking.
Oh, I'd be happy to do that. It's so entertaining for me. And what's unique and interesting with my daughter Meredith is that she's really able to verbalize how she's thinking. And the work that we did with you helped me to understand how she thinks, so then I could ask her the right questions to understand her. But what we discovered was she has this, I guess I'll call it like a mental village in her mind. She actually calls it Brainsburg. And she has this little girl, and her name is Meredith. And my Meredith, it's confusing. My Meredith says basically that's her, but it's her little assistant. And she is really the main player in this Brainsburg, although there are a lot of characters. And she goes to work every day in the treasure of files. And the treasure of files contains all the filing cabinets with all of the pictures, images, movies, and information that she's ever learned in her whole life. Basically, all of her knowledge is stored in these files. And so when Meredith needs to know something, She'll ask Meribeth to go to the files and find what she's looking for. And I can give you a couple examples. I call this one the chicken sandwich story. She told me one day, this was in fourth grade, she was at the cafeteria, and they had chicken sandwiches for lunch. Well, bread, like a breaded chicken sandwich. And she had never had that before, and so she said, she thought to herself, I wonder if that's like a chicken nugget, but just bigger and on a bun. So then she said, I went up to my files, she said, I know there was a name for that logic that I used to figure that out. So she went up to her files. She went back to second grade, pulled second grade out. Then she pulled out vocabulary. And I'm hearing some noise in the background. I'm not sure if that's from you, Marianne. So she was going through the vocabulary files. She was thumbing through the vocabulary files and found the word deduction. So she said, great, I found the word for the logic that I used to figure out what that sandwich was going to taste like. But then she said, Mom, I didn't just find the word. I saw my second grade teacher writing the word on the board. I saw the wrinkles in my teacher's shirt as she wrote the word on the board, and I could see the variation on the edges of the letters as they were written in chalk on the board. That, as you can imagine, really said it all for me. That blew me away, the extent of her visual memory. It was very remarkable. So she uses Meribeth to access all this information. Meribeth has a little assistant. They have all these places in Brainsburg. They eat brain flakes for breakfast. They go to Brains and Noble to buy their books. That gives you a little sense.
That's wonderful.
It's very entertaining. Very entertaining.
You see what a delight this visual brain is. So that's why we want to be, a maverick mind is a badge of honor.
So when it is, and in our house, my younger son says, I wish I was a maverick like my mom and my sister. And he may well be, but yeah, Meredith definitely carries it as a badge of honor.
And just to underscore that, I started a program many years ago at the Ohio State University Medical School, and I was hired to come and assist in the tutoring office for the medical students with disabilities. So that doesn't sound right, does it? Like you said earlier, how would you get to medical school if you had a disability or language problem? But people were flunking out, so something wasn't working right, because it's very hard to get in. So to be that selective and to pick the cream of the crop to be your student body and then have people not make it was very upsetting to the school. And so when we found out that these super high visuals were having problems not in their rotations or not doing the patient care, they were having problems on a reading and writing test about that. So when we announced that we had a Maverick Brain Clinic for super genius visuals, the dean expected to have maybe one or two people that I would be working with, and pretty soon we had like 100 people signed up. They all wanted to be Mavericks because being a super genius visual in medical school is very critically important. So everybody wanted to be a super genius Maverick, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Because the higher your visuals when you're doing an operation, the better doctor you are. So one time the dean said, well, we have this candidate that is very slow at reading, and he wants to be an emergency room doctor. So we're thinking of not directing him that way. And I said, you know, how much reading is he doing in the emergency room? Probably none, You know, you've got to think quickly in an emergency and handle things on autopilot. And that rapid visual brain is the best candidate for emergency room, not great reader like me. You see, Angie?
Mm-hmm.
This visual brain is good. It's a good, the best brain. If I could buy a brain, I'd buy that. But it can create huge despair because the visual brain is so much more evolved and so much more powerful than the verbal brain that, like in our children, Meredith and Whitney, we saw a lot of symptoms caused by it that disrupted success at school.
Right. But the good news is that those can be helped. And I want to ask you sort of what are you left with once you eliminate those symptoms? Are you able to bring the verbal skills up to maybe not just an adequate level, but one, a superior level? What's the prognosis?
Yeah, it depends on, the brain predictors of success, which we measure at the beginning. And it depends on, how long we work on it. Like learning a foreign language. If you take, French in high school, you're going to be a different French speaker than if you major in French in college, live in France, and work in France. Because you're practicing the French language more and more and more. So some medical students that I work with, we bring up their verbal abilities to the point that they do well on the test that they need to pass to be certified, but they're planning to stay in visual land, and that's their goal is not to become a verbal person. And I bring up the medical students because they're grown-ups, and even with the little preschoolers, I'm thinking of building an adult brain so that their brain is ready for all the challenges ahead as they grow up. We have adult architecture for language at age 6. And we rebuild that in the middle school years, 12 to 14. We rebuild the architecture. But basically, that structure for language is created in the first 6 years. So that's why I'm always thinking of adults. We want a system that lasts forever. So yes,
well,
you can become symptom-free, and you can have, like Whitney's verbal abilities on testing would all be in the superior range. And when he was in ninth grade, he took a college class, and his notes were used as the example for all the other people's notes. And they were, Whitney was like 14 and they were 25 years old. His notes were the example if anybody needed notes after class.
Was
superior in the note taking.
I was going to say, instead of Whitney being in France, he was in he was in verbal land with the best of the best with you. So that was very helpful for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was going to be Whitney's mom his whole life, my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I wanted to continue to work with him so he could do whatever he wanted. But it's so interesting now, he's an engineer, chemical engineer, but his job, his boss has selected Whitney to arbitrate disputes between employees, the corporation, and the union. So think how verbal that is, Andy.
Wow.
And he enjoys it, and everybody walks away happy, and it's a very tricky situation.
But he's got skills both in verbal and visual to help him through that are so high. So in a way, I kind of refer to that as, in my mind, as the golden ticket. If you're highly visual and highly verbal, I mean, you're really set up for success. And my question for you is, let's say you have someone that you would call a maverick that's highly visual but never really had any symptoms. Do you still label them maverick?
That's an interesting question. No one's asked before. Really, the definition of a maverick is highly visual with a language problem. But the language problem can be remediated. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think of as a maverick. High visual, weak auditory, and then as they improve, they're still a maverick. When Whitney went to college, I called the American Speech and Hearing Association on all, you know, any IQ test or psychometric test, Whitney'd score high on the verbals. So if you looked at test scores or traditional psychoeducational battery, Whitney, and his grades were A's and B's, so what's the disability here? And what the American Speech and Hearing Association said, you know, if he needs accommodations in college, he can have them because he had a different developmental profile than other children. He didn't talk for 7 years. So even though these symptoms are gone and his test scores are high and his performance has been superior academically, if he needs extra time on a test or he needs notes ahead of time, you can go to the disability office and say he has a history of having problems in the first 7 years of his life, and now he may need these accommodations. And Whitney and I did that, but he actually never did need any accommodations. But we decided to just put that in place so that his anxiety would remain low. He chose a very difficult major.
And I imagine, he would perform poorly if he was in a very noisy environment, perhaps, or it might be more difficult or cause more anxiety.
Well, that's what we thought. But now he's working in an engineering plant that's very noisy, arbitrating these problems. And one of the reasons he's so good at it is he, just like Meredith, he has the manual that they need for all the employee issues, the human resources manual, Whitney can see in his mind. So if an employee comes in and says, well, you know, in the manual it says that I can do this and that, Whitney can say, no, on page 81, this is exactly what it says, and that's why we want to work this out. You know, so he can look up the manual in his head.
Right.
And they go, oh, that's what it said on page 81? And he goes, uh-huh.
I have a lot of conversations with highly visual people, and they don't think that they're smart because they almost feel like it's cheating sometimes because they can see it.
Yeah.
I would still say that they're very smart. I know there was one story about my husband. I'm sorry, I'm talking about him again. He probably doesn't want me to, but he was walking in between buildings at where he works, which is a large corporate office, and he was talking to an insurance agent. He was registering an RV that we had just purchased, and the insurance agent asked him for the VIN number, and he said, hold on, let me get it. And the insurance agent said, well, I thought you were walking in between buildings. And he said, well, what he meant was he was getting the file in his mind to read the
right
VIN number off.
Uh-huh.
And a VIN number. I can't imagine being able to remember that.
I know, but it is that visual memory. I've had many, many, many people tell me that it's cheating. High school kids, college kids, and the reason that I think they feel it's cheating, because if they're asked to explain something verbally, it's part of their knowledge, so it isn't cheating. They know what the pictures, the words said in the page, but and they understand it, and it's part of their knowledge. But when they're asked to explain it to somebody else with talking, sometimes the act of talking could be scrambled or could be, you know, incomplete. It doesn't mean they don't know it, though. It means that they have trouble talking. You see, Angie?
It makes a lot of sense. It does. It makes a lot of sense. We have about 5 minutes left, and there was one question I wanted to get to that we didn't talk about in previous interviews, and that has to do with the situation you hear about often when you have about a 2-year-old child who was speaking and appearingly developing right on track, but then all of a sudden starts losing their speech. And I've heard you talk before about whether this could be a potential maverick mind going on, experiencing symptoms, versus maybe something like autism. Could you just speak to that for a couple of minutes?
Sure. The first thing to do when you're trying to figure out if something is that you're seeing, some symptoms that you're seeing is autism or a language problem, is to look at the jobs in the family tree. If they're all visual people, like in your family, then we have a pretty good idea that this could be a maverick mind, because that would not be characteristic of autistic children. Then we want to look at why would somebody stop talking when they're, you know, about 2 years old? About 2 years old, we develop what's called object constancy in our language development, and we start to get words that fit into categories, and then sentences that use agent, action, object to put the words out as expressive language. If we're born with a pre-engineering for being dominantly visual, that object constancy is in pictures, not words, and there are no words that need to be there. So the world is getting organized visually, and the visual brain doesn't need any words. So a sculptor doesn't need to talk about it, making a sculpture. I take a four-hour art class each week, and no one talks. The teacher comes around and paints on my painting to show me how to do something better. Or she'll go, She doesn't talk at all. And that's the 4 hours flies by. You see, Angie? So in her world, she's teaching a class, we're all paying for it, but there's no talking. She's thinking hard, though. She's thinking about how to make us better painters. But she's not thinking in paragraphs of talking. She's thinking about, why didn't I understand that there's a shadow here? And so she paints the shadow, and then I go, aha, that's where the shadow would fall. But there's no word. So I can't even explain it, Angie. It's not words. You see what I mean?
It's just, aha, oh. Well, I was going to give a quick example from my daughter that might help to highlight that. One time we were in the car and she said, Mom, when you were in college, were you a nurse or a waitress? And I was so confused by this question because I never mentioned anything to do with nursing in my whole life. But I had learned about mavericks, and so I thought, you know what, I bet she's confusing images. And so I asked her, I said, do you have a similar picture in your mind for a nurse and a waitress? And she said, yes, they both are wearing white uniforms with white shoes, like a waitress might wear in a diner. So I went, okay. And so one of the things she did after we started with you was she was going back to all her pictures in her mind and labeling them, like with a label maker.
Mm-hmm.
She went to her picture of the solar system and labeled all the planets with the words.
And how old was she?
She was probably 9.
Not 2.
Right.
She was 9, not 2 years old.
And she didn't have the words in her mind for things, just pictures.
Right. So that's a wonderful... wonderful, wonderful example, because Meredith is by far a super genius.
I bet she'll like to hear this interview.
Because, you know, Piaget one time said you can't have thoughts without words. And people still believe that. But Meredith and Whitney have had a lot of thoughts without words, haven't they?
Well, that's for sure. You know, she talks about her mind in Brainsburg, and she says how fun it is. And she said it's like a portable dollhouse. I can take it with me anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her this summer, I said, do you want to take this camp, these lessons? And she said, Mom, I just want to sit home all summer and just think. I can just think all day long.
And that is a wonderful comment to end on, Angie. That Meredith is the perfect example of the supreme maverick mind and a living doll.
Oh, well, thank you. And can't thank you enough for doing this series with us. I just hope it opens up a lot of doors for people, if not just new ways of thinking and approaching things. So for the last time, thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, thank you, Angie. You've put together a great series, and I'd love to do it again sometime.
Well, we might take you up on that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Bye.